CliffCentral.com.
It is the 3rd of August, and I'm feeling very good because I know that August is the last really shit month of the year, and then we come around to spring. Woohoo! See those birds chirping, and I mean, my rabbit's back. This is good news.
Yay!
Yeah, you know the rabbit that gored. I should save this for Wednesday, but I can't help myself.
Yes.
The rabbit bounced into my garden on, what was it, Saturday? Yeah, Saturday morning. I was like, what the hell? And Saturday was the first. And there's this thing that you say, rabbits, 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 or in Afrikaans, harsies, 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 which you say on the first of the month.
So oh, really?
Yeah. It's a superstitious thing that some people do. So I thought that's a sign. It's a good omen. The rabbit's back.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Because I felt like, oh no, all these things are dying and being taken by birds of prey and all kinds of other things.
He probably built himself a lovely little underground burrow.
Yeah,
he was quite happy there.
I think it was also because the 1st of August was Gord's birthday and he's obsessed with these rabbits. So maybe it has something to do with it.
It all worked out like that.
Yes. Anyway, after also having a quiet weekend at home, I'm ready to get stuck into this week. You know how when you've had enough sleep and you actually feel good, you can't wait to get your teeth into projects, things that you put off, things that you need to do.
Get back in the saddle, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's also my brother's birthday today. And this is my birthday month.
It is too.
Oh, yeah. Luckily this year
what
I have...
What are you doing for your brother's birthday?
For my brother's birthday, nothing, I think, because he's actually away at the moment.
Some people have really taken this opportunity to travel now. Mm. Well, within our provincial borders.
Yeah, you can. You can actually go and, you know,
take It's really exciting, actually.
Well, it forces you to find places that are within the province that you've never gone to before, but that are actually really not out of reach and could be very, very
Well, I have
cool.
a friend who's pissed about that right now.
What's that?
I have a friend who's pissed about that right now and lives in the city and says, you know, Johannesburg and Gauteng overall is usually a big leader in South Africa. But this time we're on the bottom end of things. Because you think about it, most other provinces have great things. You know, the Western Cape and KZN and the Eastern Cape have the coast and, you know, Limpopo and whatnot have these, you know, Kruger National Park or whatnot. Gauteng doesn't really have a lot of great
things. Dikoneng.
Don't mention
Dinokeng.
That one?
That Dikoneng.
Don't mention like Cradle of Humankind. Yes, it's all good and great, but you can't compare that to like the rolling green of the Eastern Cape and the coastline.
Midlands.
No, it's just not the same.
I've heard of some people getting work permits and going to Dullstroom, for instance.
No, but there are places around Joburg that you'd be surprised about.
Like?
In Pretoria or just north of Pretoria.
Yeah.
Gorgeous places.
Absolutely. There are places out where all the wedding venues are, for example, where they have amazing things for you to do. A day trip, or you could book a room and stay the night in some of these places because they don't have weddings on at the moment. So they've turned themselves into little retreats, and that could be quite fun for some of us. So go for it if you can do it. Of course, that's presupposing you have a little bit of money lying around, which nobody does, but if you could scrape it together. Someone said to me that the best joke they've heard in a little while is that this guy wakes up and he hears that his house is being broken into, so he goes, "What do you want?" He shouts, and the criminal goes, "I'm looking for money." So he says, "Great, can I help?" So I think that's what's happening for a lot of people.
Oh my gosh. Well, speaking of weddings, I read the story over the weekend about a bride in Australia who, well, obviously her wedding invite list had to be cut because of COVID-19.
Oh, right. So she could only have 50 people or whatever.
Yeah, so. Or perhaps even less. I mean, you know, I'm in the process of planning a funeral at the moment, and there can be 10 of us.
Yeah.
So she thought the only way to get through this was by asking her guests, but including her own family, to write a 500-word essay motivating why they needed to get an invite to her wedding.
Well, I think that's great. I wouldn't write the essay. I mean, I'd be furious if someone made me write an essay.
Exactly. But her own sister had to write an essay, and she refused.
But it's one hell of a way to narrow it down, right? I mean, you've got to find creative ways of doing this. And how do we know that that isn't the best way to choose? Because there might be the people who really want to be there, who care about you the most. They might be willing to write that stuff down. Of course, it is very me, you know, write a 500-word essay about me and why you want to come to my wedding. It's a little bit self-serving, but in these times, why not? You've got to cut the guest list somehow.
I don't know. I wouldn't put in the trouble.
Pihleng has just written a message to us. Your guys, I had a dream in which I was working with Leanne at some school with people who had disabilities. I think we were working in the kitchen. It was just a mess. There was gravy on the floor, but we still served it. How possible is this? Because I've never met her. You guys are now invading my space reserved for my ancestors in my dreams.
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh. But yeah. If I was serving food to the disabled in the kitchen, there probably would be gravy on the floor. It's probably very accurate.
Sure, absolutely.
How you even ended up at that school? What you're doing there? I have no idea.
I'm not getting into Pihleng's dreams. I'm sorry. Gail says, morning team, on the matter of the police and trust and corruption, just to bring you up to speed on monitoring taxis crossing provincial borders, this is how it works. It's 180 rand from Polokwane to Pretoria. No permit, then 200 rand. In a taxi with 12 to 15 passengers, 10 without permits, police stop vehicles at the border of the Carousel E-toll, all out for temperature taking, that's in inverted commas, in an army tent, policemen into vehicle for inspection, and 20 rand times 10, the deal goes down. It's manned by 5 policemen. We stop at least 15 taxis a day. That's 3,000 rand per policeman per day on a conservative estimate.
Wow.
The station commander has his cut has to go further up the chain as well. No wonder we get stopped on our way to Waterberg. This is true. Peace and love, Gail. Well, if that's happening, you know, again, I don't doubt that it's happening, Gail, but it's just so sick that the poorest people who are trying to get a taxi from Polokwane to Pretoria have to pay these bribes and that these police get away with it. It's just wrong. It's wrong on so many levels. Our police are so rotten. I don't trust them at all. I'm sorry. I know there are good police people. But
to have the kind of mind to devise all of these
to do that to plans. To gogos and to parents who are trying to reunite with their children or children to reunite with their parents, it just seems so cruel to go after what little money they have because you want to enrich yourself when you're already being paid a salary just to do your job, and that job is to follow the law. Ugh.
Jeez, it's disgusting.
It is disgusting, man. Thank you, Gail, but you've pissed me off. I was having a good morning. Cabello from Alex says, I was listening to the show from the 16th of July when Gareth mentioned his skin appointment. Fast forward to So What Now that aired on the 29th, and I must compliment you. Ooh, you look great. Your skin really is looking good. So I take the procedure. Well, it wasn't a procedure. You make it sound like I went in for an operation. I just went to the woman.
A non-surgical facelift.
Yeah, she's like a wizard. We've had her on before. You've met Christina, right? I've had her on the show. We've got to get her on again. She can share her trade secrets, her witchcraft with us. So that's very nice, Cabello. Thank you. Keep on it. But she, Cabello also has a note for Sispumi. If you thought in Soweto people were chilled, come to Alex. This part weekend, I heard music at 2 a.m. and could tell it was from nearby, a pub. It's a vibe. I'm in Alex, by the way. There's no curfew in Alex. There we go, Cabello. Telling us that Alex just has its own rules, everybody.
Have any of your neighbors been hosting parties?
I heard, because I was at home and I went to sleep early on Friday and Saturday, I was lying in bed reading. In fact, I thought, you know what, if someone had seen me on Friday and Saturday, I would have thought, this is the most old, boring man in the world. I had a cup of tea. I was lying in bed with the pillows propped up behind me, and I was reading books. I hope someone sees this, because then they'll know that I'm not talking shit when I say that I'm boring some of the time.
I had to stop myself because
I heard my neighbors. I heard that there was something, not the direct neighbors, but, you know, further along, you can hear that sound that carries on the air a little bit.
I had to stop myself because over the past, I'll say like 2 weeks, there've been two separate incidences, and really the complex has been so lax now with rules. It's just like, live. But one of my neighbors was hosting people. And once I got to counting eight, I thought, Sia, like, what are you doing? And was honestly standing by the blinds going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 people.
I'm changing your name. Your name is changed to Karen.
But you know, half of it is actually jealousy.
Of course, a bit of envy.
So I ended up envy. I did. But more so, I thought, instead of complaining, I'm just going to make sure I am not getting anywhere close to those neighbors, because who knows what they were swapping and what viruses they might have.
We've had a house in our street where they have really noisy motorbikes. And at about 10 o'clock at night, they rev them up and down the street. And so on our group last night, everyone just had it and said, does anybody know what number the house is? And we figured out who they were. And someone said, do you have any idea who it is? And I replied, no, but I'd like to throttle them with a pun on throttle. Jeez, was I the star of the group? I made the joke of the century. Everyone loved that.
So usually it's a very serious, boring group, huh?
Yeah, not the most intelligent bunch of people.
Oh, God. Okay.
Hey, Leanne, how's your fitness routine going?
Oh, so I did, the first day I told you, I did an aerobics, low impact aerobics thing. Mm-hmm. The next day I went for a walk in the safe zone, which is a manned zone from 4 to 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. I was halfway and I realized I didn't have a mask on. I felt like such an idiot. And then all hell broke loose in my family life. So I haven't gone further, but today's Monday, it's a new week, so I'll get back on it today.
Yeah, I'm picking up my exercise regime this week as well. I was very lazy last week. I blamed the fact that I thought I had a cold. Anyway,
you're still committed to it, so that's fine.
These parties that people are having, I think, you know, certainly if it's the people who are living in the house, there's no reason why you shouldn't. But if you are inviting other people in, again, like if... people are going to do this regardless. No one's going to stop anyone. And I don't get jealous when I hear of other people having a party, because I don't know any of the people there, so I wouldn't want to go. But I would be jealous if I found out that a whole lot of my friends had a party and they didn't invite me.
Mm-hmm.
That would piss me off. Wouldn't that piss you off?
No.
Yeah,
oh, come on. Even
I wouldn't
just
like that.
But see, you don't have to go, but just to not even get an invite? What if you find out that... 2 weeks ago, all the friends in a certain group of yours got together, but they didn't invite you. You'd feel a bit upset. That would be a reason to be upset.
Really, in these times, no.
Your priorities are different now.
Yeah, I even declined going on another hike this past weekend, and I don't know whether it's accurate or not. I just saw one post and I haven't fact checked it, but supposedly one of these reserves, these nature reserves, has closed now because of how they're deemed a high risk area because of the volumes of people who are going to hike there. Hmm. So I don't want to be out and about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's hope less disease, and let's hope that the curve is starting to turn the other way. I know that, you know, in parts of America now, they're starting to see a decline in the number of new cases, which is obviously good news.
And just last night I was reading that the liquor industry should start preparing itself to trade again.
Oh.
And that being because the capacity at hospitals, because that was the main concern, right?
Yeah.
Was that people were using up beds in the emergency room because of alcohol-related traumas. But apparently capacity in Western Cape hospitals is at 75% and Gauteng hospitals at 50%. So that can't really be used as an excuse anymore. And remembering the billions that have been lost in the liquor industry to those who work in it.
Yeah.
Look,
we're going to talk tobacco in a moment because, you know, I've been on about this for a while, and we're trying to talk to normal people who are in the world, who are in this business, not the, you know, the CEO of some big tobacco company. We're talking to, like last week, Mputi from Soweto, who was telling us about the impact on this ban in the townships, and particularly in his township in Soweto. We've spoken to an independent black farmer the week before. Today we're going to speak to someone called Edna Kloppers, who is a tobacco farmer in Vaalwater in the Limpopo province. We'll find out how that ban is affecting her. That's coming up in a short while. Just trying to introduce you to the people on the ground who are feeling the effects of this ban the worst. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, not to get back to this topic, even though I know we were trying to avoid it, but how bizarre have been these death rumors around our deputy president this weekend?
What?
Yes.
Have they been saying he's dead?
Yeah. And even the deputy...
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. But I mean, this guy's been basically politically dead since the ANC got together at... What was it called? The showgrounds when they had their convention.
That's right, yeah.
So what are they saying? That he died of COVID?
No. They've had to go against those rumors. Yesterday, his office even had to release a statement saying that the office of the deputy president has received numerous calls from concerned South Africans regarding the health status of Deputy President David Mabuza. We would like to assure South Africans that the Deputy President is at home and well. Anything contrary to this malicious and unfortunate rumor.
This is like a new trend, though, worldwide.
Yeah, but...
People were saying that Shane Dawson had died. I know that he's no one really important.
But with our Deputy President, remember 2 weeks ago, he missed two parliamentary Q&A sessions. Because of an illness, an inverted commas.
That's just because he doesn't know where the hell he is. This is one of the stupidest people in South Africa. Didi Mabuza has not been active in any which way since he became deputy president. Can you name one thing he's done as deputy president? One thing. Anybody.
Maybe he works really hard behind the scenes, Gareth.
No, come on.
I think if they were upfront with what was happening to him, maybe, you know, that would just dispel everything. You know, you've confronted the issue and that's it. Because the only thing that we heard 2 weeks ago was another statement from Thandi Modise, the National Assembly Speaker, who said that the Deputy President was, in quotes, unable to honor scheduled appearances in both houses due to ill health.
It could be anything. He could have piles, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, correct. I hope he does have piles. He is a really, really wasteful individual who just seems to be taking public money for sitting in an office and doing nothing.
So this, I thought, I hope doesn't catch too much of a trend on Twitter. People were saying, nope, we want to see him live stream from wherever he is. We want to see if he's alive.
Why are people so interested because
he's been like a ghost. Leanne, he's the second most, in terms of our constitution, he's the second most important person in the executive, right?
Mm.
It's a fairly big deal.
Yeah, he could have to step up at any point.
And you don't know anything about him. Can you tell me more than three things about the man, let alone that he's the deputy president? You can't say that's one of the facts, right? So give me three.
And now I don't even know if he's alive or not.
We don't know if he's alive because, honestly, politically, he's been so quiet that he may as well be dead. And being deputy president, surely there's some things you've got to do. I mean, like, we knew Cyril was deputy president under Jacob Zuma, and occasionally he'd poke his head out and say something or do something. When Jacob Zuma was deputy president under Thabo Mbeki, he was in charge of all kinds of stuff. He was given, you know, mostly stuff to keep him out of the way, but he was given things to do. This guy, we don't even know what he's there for, and he's earning a lot of money to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, prove you're alive. That would be step number one. Number two, prove that you actually are someone who can make a difference in South Africa, positive or negative. At this point, we'd take whatever we can get. Didi Mabuza, what a joke. A joke of a human being. How does that guy sleep at night knowing that he's taking a salary, has been for 2 years, done nothing? Imagine that. really is. It's good to be a cater, hey? It's good to be a comrade. You just get into that position and you just chill. I've always thought the best job in the world has got to be like deputy president. No one blames you when things go wrong. No one gives you credit when things go right, but you just quietly take a salary and you cut a couple of ribbons and you live in state housing and you get everything paid for.
And the bar is unfortunately, or rather fortunately, in his case, so low in South Africa.
Totally.
All he had to do was, even when our president was addressing us last 2 weeks ago, all he had to do was just sit in the back.
Yeah.
Just to know that, okay, we see him and he's there.
Yeah, he's alive. He can, yeah, he can mouth words, basic sentences.
Yeah, if you think about it, an understudy in a theater production does more.
Correct.
Yeah, because I have to remember the lines.
Yeah. Yeah,
he doesn't even have that part to do. What a joke. So they say he's dead. This is news. I didn't see this over the weekend. Wow, what a story. Okay, there's lots of things to talk about, but I do want to speak to Edna Kloppers, who's on the line with us at the moment. Hey, Edna, how are you?
Good morning, girls and your team. I'm quite well, thank you very much.
Is it very cold in Falwater?
You know, usually when people ask us this, we feel a bit ashamed to say yes, because you guys apparently, you know, you do know the term cold. Apparently, we don't have it that bad, but we climatize. So for us, yes, it is a bit chilly this morning.
All right. So, Edna, the reason I wanted to talk to you, and thanks for making time for us, I know you're a tobacco farmer, and I know that this ban has really affected you guys extremely badly. We've spoken to a number of other people over the last couple of days, but you're working with a group at SATA, the South African Tobacco Transformation Alliance, to just lift this ban, or to very least try to get government to take notice of what's going on. Smokers have not stopped smoking. Illegal tobacco is all over the place. And you guys, who are trying to do the legitimate business of trading in a product that is not illegal, are being forced to lose your livelihoods. There is a huge amount of pressure on you to be able to bring in some money, to be able to keep your staff employed. I know that you personally have experience in this, and I thought, you know what, rather than talking to somebody who runs an organization, we talk to one of the actual tobacco farmers. So what's happened in your business?
Gareth, yeah, first of all, I'm very grateful for the opportunity that you guys give to my Lifterband family, like Johnny and Zachariah and Maputi. We are incredibly grateful, and we are very committed to our cause because of all the reasons that you've just mentioned. You know, this whole ban is not about a like or a dislike of tobacco. Mm-hmm. That's not what it's about. In fact, it's jeopardizing the whole economy of South Africa directly for us, the farmers.
Yeah.
You know, we are 200 commercial farmers, and we are 160 emerging black farmers. And together we provide work to 8,000 farm workers. Now, what's very important is that farm workers don't have the luxury of handing in their CVs at goodness knows where, being recruited for other positions if things go sour on the farming industry side. So they are very, very much dependent on the income that they generate from farming activity. Now, these 8,000 farm workers, we've calculated that made a rough sum of about 8,000 farm workers, giving an income on 30,000 dependents. So 30,000 dependents, and I'm telling you, that number is growing by the day. I've just had a conversation Friday with a good friend of mine, and she said that from her three children, two is retrenched now.
Yeah.
And they, with their dependents, have moved back to her house. So that 30,000 is increasing by the day. That's reliable on the income that tobacco gives. We feel that the government is approaching the whole virus one-sided. It's being looked at tobacco as an enemy and not as a problem solver. So for us, on ground level, we are all day, all through the day, in conversation with our labors, trying to convince them that we will fight hand and tooth to try to get this ban lifted.
Right.
Because we can't produce tobacco. These people that are so well skilled, because tobacco is not, it's a product that asks for well-skilled, well-trained, well-educated farm laborers within the farming sector. If we lose them, we lose them permanently, and we won't be able to get them back. And that is an enormous loss for us, because if we lose farm workers that are dedicated, we contribute to a hell of a lot of grants that are going to be applicable and are going to reach the tables of the government asking for more money that they do not have to spend at this stage.
Right.
So we continue conversation with our farm workers, and we ask them to please carry out the message as well. Because if our orders that we have from our buyers gets less and less, our production line is going to get smaller and smaller. And everything is about what I spend, can I cover it with my income? And tobacco, it's a high expense crop to farm.
So again, what's happening with your farm? What are you guys doing at the moment?
Well, you said that's the beauty about tobacco. It's such a big generator of income and such a big generator of work that it's basically a 12-month process. On our farm at this stage, we are sorting tobacco. So what happens right now, we've got seedlings in tunnels. Many farmers don't use the method anymore of making their own seedlings. They buy it from nurseries in.
Right.
So that's another part of the tobacco value chain that's in threat now, is the nurseries. So we make our seedlings from mid-May, and we continue nursing them until about September, mid-September. It all depends on the heat factor. And then we start planting them out into the lands. And then we grow them, we nourish them, we look after them. And then in about December, January, we start reaping. And that reaping process goes up until about April. And from April until about August, September, we sort it. So they come out of the tobacco barns where they've been cured. Mm-hmm. We put them into big sheds, and then leaf by leaf, every leaf has been sorted by a lady who is, they are mind-blowing, because you see a yellow leaf and they say, oh, no, we see a different kind of yellow leaf. So it's the intensity of it is very, very high. So these ladies are sorting them now. And from the sorting process, it goes to LTP, Limpopo Tobacco Processes.
Yeah.
I don't know if the consumers know it, but Limpopo Tobacco Processes is the single biggest supplier of leaf in South Africa, from the farmer to the consumer.
That's amazing.
So if you break this chain in any way, 296,000 people will be affected dramatically. We only think about farmers. We only think about smokers. There's a whole chain in between that's going to get affected. And the sad part for me, and that's what I so desperately tried, and I spoke to my farm neighbors about the other day, and they were mind-boggled about what I said to them.
Yeah.
If you can, I like, you know, you spoke to Johnny, and Johnny gave you figures, and
Johnny
numbers.
Yeah.
But those figures, for us normal people, if I can call myself now a normal person, some might dispute that very highly, but if I can call myself a normal person, you know, those figures are over my head. They are too big for me to comprehend. So I said to them, imagine for me 2 rugby fields. Sorry, I was busy cracking up here on the screen, but imagine for me 2 rugby fields.
Yeah.
And on those rugby fields, 53,000 nurses are standing.
Amazing.
They are rested. They've got protective gear on.
Yeah.
They are eager to work. They want to attend to the sick. Right next to them on these 2 rugby fields are 5,500 ventilators. My good grief.
Yeah.
I think South Africa would pull their front teeth for 5,500 ventilators.
Sure.
And all of that is right and ready for brand new 2 hospitals.
Yeah.
That, Gareth, is what went down the tubes due to this ban. It's lost forever.
Yeah.
And we cannot generate it back.
And the only people who are making any money right now are the illegal tobacco people. And they're going to make it very hard for the ordinary tobacco people to get back into the game after all of this, right?
Yes, they are. And why are they going to make it extremely difficult for us? Because of the taxes. The illegal cigarette trade do not contribute to the economy of South Africa. It does not contribute to the taxes that are being generated.
Right.
So the 25 rand packet that you stumble upon has no taxes on it, because you need to earn at least about 17 rand just to make the taxes paid. So nothing comes into the economy. Those hospitals, those nurses, those ventilators, it's gone because of the illicit trade that took over. You know, before the ban, 35% illiterate took place in South Africa before the ban.
Right.
18 weeks later, 100% illicit trade.
Right.
It is absolutely ridiculous that within 18 weeks you could just ruin the economy like that.
Well, I love the way you're so passionate about this. Obviously, it's your livelihood, so you know what's going on and you can feel it very deeply. But I'm just pleased that you also are able to illustrate some of these on-the-ground facts that many of us miss because we hear the news stories, you know, and they're always quoting, as you said, Johnny's statistics or whoever else's statistics we managed to talk to. Here are actual real-life stories that are going on in parts of South Africa where communities, whole communities, are completely reliant on your line of work. I just feel, as a non-smoker, that we've all got to get behind this. And if you haven't already, go along to lifttheban.org. That's lifttheban.org and sign up immediately. And let's try to get government's attention however we can. Hashtag lifttheban on social media and wherever else you can. Thank you so much. What a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you, Gareth. I appreciate it. I would just like to say that, you know, a few months ago, not so long ago, we managed to drive clean drinking water from very north of South Africa to the very south of South Africa for people to survive due to the drought.
Cape Town had their drought,
Yes, I believe in South Africans. I believe in the hearts that they would please help us to lift this ban. Thank you so much for this time.
Thank you, Edna. Edna Knoppers, who is working with the Tobacco Transformation Alliance, and she's a tobacco farmer. So thank you, Edna. Wow.
Oh my gosh. You can just sense the level of frustration and helplessness. Damn. Yeah.
I was talking to someone who they are desperately trying to get government to open up and just talk to them in the airline industry at the moment, which is also just in shit, like you can't believe. Yeah. And just to even get them to listen to you. Like these guys in government are so arrogant that they just don't even think it's important.
They're like kids with their fingers in their ears going, la, 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 la.
I mean, how are we meant to respect these people? Do they not realize that this comes at a cost? If you ignore people, if you ignore business, if you ignore the fact that you are affecting everybody's lives, and you think that that isn't going to come at a cost, government, you're in big trouble because we have an election coming up. And people will start to get more and more furious with you as we get close to that election. Did you see what happened on Friday? It was ANC Friday on social media.
And then what did it become?
It became FUTSAC ANC.
Yes.
Very quickly. I'm sure anybody who was on social media, and I don't really pay attention to Twitter very much, but I couldn't even miss this because it spilled over into the news.
Yeah.
That what was meant to be a celebration of the ANC, where they obviously paid a bunch of young people to go on and like express their love for the ANC, very quickly turned into... Two-thirds of the responses were like, get out, ANC, we hate you, you're useless, you're shit, FUTSAC, all that kind of thing. So it is not going well for the majority party in this country right now.
Doesn't it just make you question, what is the role of government then? If we go with this analogy of that you brought up, Leanne, of kids, a kid with you know their fingers in the ears, why aren't you listening to you? Your people? Why aren't you hearing what is important to them, what their concerns are, what they're worried about? Then what are you there for?
Well, I've asked this question now for 20 years, and I still have to get a satisfactory answer from people. And just to illustrate the point, one thing that did happen yesterday, which we should all be very excited about, is that Elon Musk landed the spacecraft back on Earth with all those astronauts on it. Two Americans landed safely after spending 2 months in space. 11 years ago, an Obama committee concluded it would take 12 years and it would cost $26 billion. Elon Musk, a private businessman, did it in 6 years for less than a billion.
That's amazing.
Private competition is always better than government.
Yeah.
You don't need me to say so. Just look at what's gone on and what was fired up into space just a short while ago and these two astronauts who've landed safely back on Earth. It cost $1 billion as opposed to the $26 billion government said it would cost. It took 6 years as opposed to the 12 years, half the time that the government said it would.
You literally do need a space cowboy who says, what do you mean? You know, you can imagine him filing down the corridor and people are sticking their heads out of their offices going, Elon, we've met with opposition on this. And he's like, I don't care. Fix it. Break down the wall.
Yeah.
You know,
let's do this. I think he probably is a bit like that. I mean, you need some different sort of motivation to make things like this happen.
But the whole motivation in private industry, in private business, is honest. It's trustworthy. You're looking for profit. You're looking for success. You're looking to make sure that all your people are paid. Private enterprise is honest. Government's dishonest about everything that it does. If you ask a businessman to make you a cell phone, he's going to find the cheapest way to do it. He's going to find the best way to make it work so that you don't end up coming back to him and causing trouble when it doesn't work. And he's going to make sure that he can get the process going as quickly as possible. With government, there are all kinds of other reasons that you, A, shouldn't be charging the least, because there are a whole lot of people who need to be paid, and that's your priority. Some of them your brothers and sisters and uncles and aunts, as we've seen in this PPE scandal. Second of all, you're going to take as long as you can, because that means that you've got a reason to be around for longer, right? Because government is transitory. It never lasts forever, but they try to make themselves stick around for as long as possible. And you're going to do it at great expense, because why bother trying to save money? It's public money. It's not your money. It's taxpayers' money.
So you don't feel the pinch.
You don't have to. Don't worry about that.
You don't feel the you don't feel the pressure of time either.
No.
And the more layers of approval and systems that it has to go through, the more chances there are for corruption to creep in.
And especially in this government of ours, the less likely you are to personally have to take responsibility. Because if you can go through 23 committees to get something approved, then they can never hold you responsible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let's all just remember, private enterprise will always do everything better than government ever could. And if you still trust government, if you still think, no matter what country you are in the world, if you think that government is good because Donald Trump is your president, or Boris Johnson, or Cyril Ramaphosa, I've got something to tell you, and it's going to be a very uncomfortable ride. But those people are not there to solve your problems. If anything, they make them worse. And it's like Martin Hood said this morning in the first hour of the show. The scariest words you've ever heard? I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
One of the things that have made quite an impact on me is just a discussion we had on this show a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, around what the government actually does for me. And I think it's worth repeating again. To think about your life as you have it right now, and how much of it is a result of the government. Do you work for the government? Does the government supply your medical needs? Even if your kids go to a government school, are they not paying?
Yeah.
Or you still have to fork out some money?
You're paying. Yeah.
So what exactly is the government doing for you? Well,
guys, this is just coming now. And the government has admitted smoking populations are less likely to be infected with the coronavirus and develop COVID-19. And in a further apparent inadvertent muddle, government argues cigarette purchasing during lockdown increased interpersonal contact as compared with ordinary shoppers, without acknowledging its own ban on legal cigarette sales could be blamed.
And as Putin Putti said the other day, smokers are sharing cigarettes more because they're much harder to come by. So that means that the chance of infection is going up there too. It's just the dumbest idea. We're the only country in the world that banned tobacco, the only one. And guess what? We've also got some of the dumbest cabinet ministers in the world. Oh, those two go together. All right, so let's move on. There are other things to talk about.
We go
it's
together.
Let's move on. There are other things. I wanted to talk about something that Leanne brought up. The host of Love Island, which they cancelled because of COVID, but they'd started filming it in Cape Town. And the host of Love Island in South Africa has revealed a whole lot of interesting information. Do you want to give us the insight? I never watched this show, but it was so huge when Sia and I went over to England a couple of years ago. It was the biggest show on TV. Yeah. Everyone was talking about it. And then when it came here, we were all excited, and it was drawn to a very abrupt close because of COVID.
I'm still convinced we met two sisters who were trying to audition for Love Island in Brixton.
That's true.
Remember them? Heavily, heavily tanned.
Yeah, they looked like they were browner than Sia, but they were white girls with blonde hair. And they both spoke Irish the whole time.
So the host of the South African version is not South African. She's Irish.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's Laura Whitmore.
Yes.
And she has fronted this first ever winter series in South Africa. And she's told how a mixture of contestants, products, and heat gave off a lingering aroma in the villa.
Oh. What kind of aroma? Did she describe it?
She said blatantly, the Love Island villa smells. She said, this is one thing the audience at home will never experience. Apparently, it's the smell of fake tan, flatulence, perfumes, and aftershaves, and that there are only two or three toilets with many men in the house. Mm. But apparently, the smell of farts is just overbearing.
Oh,
how
my
embarrassing!
God, so Love Island, we all watch these shows with these really good-looking people who are all tanned to the extreme and. They all look like they're really healthy and they're made up and the guys are all ripped and everybody looks fantastic. Fact is, it smells of farts.
Mm.
And I mean, she's hosted this show in other countries in the world.
Oh.
So we know now it's South Africans who are farting up a storm.
Oh.
How tragic.
That is revolting.
You know, we briefly touched on this last week, Gareth, about, the advancements being made in terms of, artificial intelligence and virtual reality. I'm not ready for smell to be transmitted. This is what we're dealing with,
I have to tell you about one quick thing, because I know we've only got 10 minutes left of the show. I started watching a TV show last night, which is on Netflix.
Was it called So What Now, which is on ENCA every Wednesday evening at 8:30 p.m.?
No, but that's a good show too. This is a different show. It's a series called Norseman, N-O-R-S-E.
Oh, I saw it advertised.
Oh, my God.
What is it? Is it a documentary, reality?
So I don't know how I've missed this, because I loved Vikings. You watched Vikings with Ragnar Lothbrok, right?
Yeah, with the Vikings.
The Vikings. Now, this was an awesome, awesome show, The Vikings. I loved it. I watched every single season. It was very gritty and dirty and real and felt like you were actually living history. And you know how I love that.
Mm-hmm.
This one, The Norseman, is just as gritty, just as dirty, just as filthy and as real, but it is hilarious. It's filmed by Norwegians, but what they've done is, this is amazing. I only found this out after watching four episodes of the first season. That's as far as I've got. It's hilarious because they've got very, very clever, very funny actors, but they're actual Norwegians and they film the same scene in English and in Norwegian. So they'll film every line twice. They'll get every actor to do every line twice, once in English, once in Norwegian. And they released the series in Norway first, in Norwegian, and it was a smash hit, and they went on to release the English version, which is now on Netflix, and I think they've done three seasons. It is so clever and so funny and violent and ridiculous.
Oh, that's exciting.
You've got to watch it though, because I laughed the whole way through every one of the episodes. They've got this one scene
and so you're meant to laugh, right? You're not just laughing.
No, it's great.
Is it like dark humor?
It's so dark, but it's if I think about it, if you look back on history, there must have been people with a great sense of humor back in the 700s AD. There must have been.
Yeah.
Humor has been a part of what, humans would laugh at each other when they fell in the caves. So we've always had a sense of humor. But there's this one scene where they go off on a raid. And the Norsemen, that the Vikings would go and raid and rape and pillage. And there's one woman, a Viking shield maiden, who's tough as nails, and she, her name is Freya, and she's married to the chief's weakling brother, who she hates, and she goes along on the raids, because the women used to go with the men sometimes, certainly the stronger, more kind of violent and aggressive women would go with on the raids. And they get back from this first raid, and all the men are commenting on how, yeah, Freya, you really had the good raid. You quite got into the raping, which was surprising.
Oh, my God.
And, like, she was raping monks.
Oh!
And, oh, my God.
And they make jokes about her. But on this raid...
So, yeah, it's a very dark humor.
It's so good. And on the one episode, they go off to raid Britain. And they land, and there's this British man who's organized a fundraising lunch. So they're all sitting on the field. It's obviously set in 700 AD. They're sitting on the field, and he goes, I'm very pleased to announce. And, you know, women with flowers in their hair and little white dresses. And,
yeah.
And it's got, you know, it's obviously got a modern treatment, but they're dressed appropriately for the era and all the rest of it. And he goes, I just want to announce we're very proud. We've managed to raise enough money for the children's hospital. And he opens this little chest, which is full of coins, and he puts it down on the table, and they're all about to cheers. And these Vikings come over the mountain, and they come and they murder all of them at their fundraiser for the children's hospital. I mean, it's
probably steal the money.
It is fantastically funny and just so good. So I am now stuck knee deep in this series. I'm going to watch all of it.
Watch me
get through three seasons before the end of the week.
How many are available? All three?
All three, I think. So I'm just going to motor through them. It's so good. Man, I love shows like that. I was looking for something to watch because I have watched zero TV during this time. Zero. So now I've got something to watch. I'm very excited.
But your routine of reading, that's also a good one.
Yeah. I've been reading a couple of history books, which, you know, is my favorite thing. So I'll get into that and share some of it with you on the show as we go. But I'm not going to bore you with the details now. Yes. Apparently,
very good.
Apparently, one other quick thing, since we're all still in the alcohol ban.
Yeah.
The prohibition. Leanne told me that there's this Scottish whiskey which they salvaged from an 80-year-old shipwreck.
Yes.
And they're about to sell it in auction. Now, I know people who would pay for three ships whiskey, the kind of money that these guys are, just because they're desperate for some drinks.
Yeah, no.
This is quite a lot more expensive.
Yeah. It's actually called sunken scotch because it's actually quite a regular occurrence finding scotch whiskey on a shipwreck.
Yeah.
And it's practically a category unto itself in the world of valuable alcohol. Whiskey rescued from the cargoes of a wrecked ship, because they've been resting for untold periods of time. Every now and again, this liquor is found and it reaches and fetches rather top dollar at auction. And this is salvaged from one of the most famous shipwrecks of the modern era, we can say, because it's only 80 years old.
Yeah.
And the Scotch will probably earn as much as $20,000 in an online auction, which is going on live at the moment.
Sure.
It was rescued or retrieved, rather, from the wreck of the SS Politician. That was the ill-fated vessel which ran aground during World War II.
Wow.
And was at the center of a national firestorm shortly after. It was on its way to Jamaica by way of Western Scotland, and was carrying some 28,000 cases of whiskey when it foundered on rocks along the rugged shoals of the Outer Hebrides.
Yes, the Scottish islands, Outer Hebrides.
Yes. So there were several attempts by officials to undergo with the salvage operation, but then nearby islanders decided to make their move on the contents. So the UK government actually viewed this as thievery, but the locals said, it's actually a whiskey, it's a whisker rescue.
Well, I don't see why not. I mean, what are you going to do? Leave it there underneath for the fishes?
Yes.
What is it called, Leanne?
It's called a whisker rescue.
You don't want to waste that whiskey on fish and octopi and such things when you can go underwater in your diving suit and rescue a few wee drums of this from the bottom of the ocean.
So of course, they've been labelled scallywags.
Yeah, well, I have a friend called Caroline. She's actually Scottish. She's very particular about what kind of scotch she likes to drink. But I think she even would be impressed to know that every time that she took a sip, she was taking a sip from something that had gone down in World War II.
How amazing.
Just the Scottish accent still just doesn't go down and settle with me properly. It really doesn't.
I'm going to send you some links to listen to a comedian called Billy Connolly. He will make you fall in love with Scottish, the way it's spoken, because he's from Glasgow, right? And Glaswegian Scottish is probably the most difficult to understand if you're not tuned to the Scottish ear. This guy has the most beautiful way of telling stories, and he is hilarious. And I know he's ailing a little bit. I remember I interviewed his wife, Pamela Stephenson, some time ago. She's terrific. She's originally from New Zealand. She was in Not the 9 o'clock News. She's now a doctor. And I know Billy's had Parkinson's and he had a couple of cancer scares. So he's not really doing stand-up comedy anymore. But do yourself a favor, Sia, today, even if it's for just 15 minutes, go onto YouTube, find a clip of Billy Connolly, either being interviewed on a talk show or doing his stand-up. You will laugh yourself to pieces because the guy is absolutely one of the best storytellers in human history.
So dry.
And that accent is so magnificent in his mouth.
I'll give it a try because one of the big artists right now, musicians, is Lewis Capaldi. And he, you probably know his songs if were to sing them. And beautiful, beautiful love songs. Firstly, he doesn't look like what you would imagine, this romantic crooner to look like.
Nice.
Then he's Scottish. So once he starts speaking,
please.
It was such a turnoff to me.
No, please go and watch Billy Connolly. Yes. He's so great. I cannot say enough nice things about this man. I wish I'd met him. I mean,
I
would give anything to meet this dude. He's just one of the most hilarious people in the universe. If you don't love Scottish after you've heard Billy Connolly, then you don't have a heart. It's just terrific.
Okay. I'll give it a try.
All right, everybody. Have a happy day. We will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Have an excellent Monday. Get lots of things done. And don't fight with anybody if you could possibly help it. It's not a great way to start your week. Okay.
Good stuff.
Very good. Thanks, everybody. CliffCentral.com